Our sun is headed into solar maximum, the period of greatest activity in its solar cycle. My name is Troy Klein, and welcome to the new podcast series called Space Weather Living History. During this series, you'll hear directly from the people who for years have been studying the evolution of space weather, how we make observations, and our capabilities to predict space weather events. Now, every 11 years on average, our sun reaches a peak period of activity called solar maximum. That's followed a few years later by a period of quiet called solar minimum. During solar maximum, there are many sunspots, solar flares, and coronal mass ejections, all of which can affect communications and technology here on Earth. Now, the energy from those solar blasts can disrupt radio communications, upset electrical power systems, damage satellites and change their orbits, cause navigational equipment to make mistakes, and even endanger astronauts walking in space. The effects from these solar storms can be far-reaching. In fact, they can have impacts throughout our entire solar system. These conditions are what we refer to as space weather. Sound exciting? Well, let's get started with our first interview.
Yeah, I'm David Hathaway. I'm a solar astronomer at NASA's Marshall Space Flight Center. My primary research interest is the sunspot cycle, the solar interior. I actually got into it because I was more interested in stellar interiors and discovered there's a star in our backyard, but flows within the sun that produce the magnetic fields that make the sunspot cycle. The thing that captured my interest was, first of all, realizing that the star in our backyard did so many fantastic things. And the sunspot cycle was one of them. As far as I'm concerned, it's the longest standing problem in solar physics as far as when it was first discovered and the fact that it still isn't figured out. And the scientist in me wants to figure things out. So that's what certainly caught my attention was the desire to figure this thing out and try to understand how this works and ultimately to the point where we can predict it and make it useful for humankind. I didn't get involved in space weather research per se until my supervisor, Dr. John Davis, challenged me to try to predict the sunspot cycle. And always wanted to take a challenge. I started looking into it and ultimately did come up with methods that work at certain phases of the solar cycle. But it was primarily the challenge from John Davis that got me started. And once I got into it, of course, once you get into any subject area, you discover all sorts of fascinating things. The turning points in my career, I started out, you know, as a high school student wanting to do stellar structure and evolution, how do stars evolve, and at that point, you know, would they collapse and form black holes? In going through undergraduate school, I studied a lot of that. It wasn't until I got to graduate school that I found that one of the real sticking points in doing stellar structure and evolution was how do you model the convective transport of heat. And the thing that was used then and is often used even to today is an engineering sort of scheme where you say that stuff rises through some fraction of a pressure scale height and then it gets taken over by another one that carries it higher. I realized that was the difficulty, and so wanted to get into stellar convection. And there, luckily, I had key people, Yuri Tomre at the University of Colorado and Peter Gilman at the High Altitude Observatory, that were doing solar convection. And sure enough, here's this star in our backyard where you can actually see this going on. So that's what got me started in getting into solar physics. Again, I already had the interest in what happens beneath the surface, the stellar interiors. So then the key things, the turning points were getting to Marshall Space Flight Center, where predicting the sunspot cycle became important. There was another group there doing it, and we were convinced that they didn't have the physics right, and because of that, the whole method just didn't make sense. And so got into trying to predict the sunspot cycle then, and with some success, So one key moment was the challenge to try to predict the sunspot cycle, and that led me into really doing space weather. I've always had a bit of a knack for talking to the public, so I would be frequently asked to give public lectures or talk to reporters, and realize that there's a lot about space weather that I better know, because questions would come up on it. And so I brushed up a bit on, you know, what had gone on in the past, what its effects were on various components of our technology and our lives. And so that's led me to where I am today. To my mind, the first key event in space weather was Heinrich Schwabe's discovery of the sunspot cycle in 1844. Prior to that, we didn't know that the sun varied, and even though we saw consequences on Earth, there was no reason to connect this to the sun. So I think that's the first one, is Heinrich Schwabe discovering the sunspot cycle. And then shortly thereafter, 1859, Carrington and Hodgson seeing a white light flare on the sun, and luckily within hours seeing effects here on Earth that were probably related to a somewhat earlier flare, but directly making the connection between something happening on the sun and something happening here at Earth. So I think that's the next key point in space weather, as far as, you know, knowing that it's there first. Then I think you end up in about the 1930s with Bartles looking at geomagnetic activity and noting in particular near solar cycle minimum this 27-day periodicity, and putting together what he called his Bartles diagram. Every 27 days what's geomagnetic activity is, and you could see the sun's imprint on that. Moving ahead from there, there's all kinds of events as far as technology, new satellites, new observatories, and so forth. And it probably gets real thick with events. But when I think about space weather and events, there are key events from the sun itself that come into play. The March 89 event, that almost anyone who talks about space weather brings up the March 89 event, because it really was significant to humans on Earth. The fact that it took out power to the province of Quebec, for where people were without power for 6 days in March in Quebec. People stood up and noticed. So I think the March 89 event was a key event. More recently, since it's been observed so much better than before, there are a number of more recent events that, because they're so well studied, I think are significant. The Bastille Day event of July 14th, 2000 was one, and then the Halloween events of 2003 is another one, where, you know, a big event on the sun, consequences here on Earth. And because we now had the technology to really study it and understand what was going on, and all the connections between something happening at the sun, something propagating through the solar system, and then hitting the near-Earth environment and the consequences for the near-Earth environment, I think those are significant events as well.
I hope you enjoyed the Space Weather Living History podcast brought to you by NASA's Sun-Earth Days program. You can learn more about the Space Weather Living History project on our website at sunearthday.nasa.gov. And don't forget to join our growing community of Facebook and Twitter fans for the latest information and facts about the new Sun Earth Day themes. For all other details about these programs, including information about our past Sun Earth Day's themes, be sure to visit our website at sunearthday.nasa.gov.
This is Troy Klein signing off.